For years, Afghan interpreters, thousands of them, worked on the front lines alongside American soldiers.
We have faced ambushes, IEDs. I have been injured in Nowzat province. One of the team members worked on an IED that I was a little far from him. He died and I got injured. It injured my private part of my body that I cannot have children.
They sometimes watched their friends and neighbors get killed. They risked their lives on a daily basis for pay that was rarely more than $1,000 a month.
Every day, I saw my friends being injured, and I saw their dead body. Making friends and see their dead body, that was really ridiculous. I don't want to see any more my friends going to die.
Those are two voices there of Afghan interpreters speaking in a new documentary by Vice Media called The Interpreters. Now, according to new reporting from Vice News, the majority of Afghan interpreters who worked with the United States government are being either denied transit to the United States or are being left in limbo for years on end, unable to get visas to this country. Meanwhile, at home, they are viewed as traitors, particularly by the Taliban, and fear for their lives once NATO and U.S. forces leave.
It means we are done. They're going to catch me. They're going to probably cut my head off. Probably, you know.
Ben Anderson is senior producer and reporter with Vice. He's been covering Afghanistan for 7 years and is the filmmaker behind the new documentary called The Interpreters. Ben, welcome.
Thank you.
Some disturbing video there and some disturbing images in your film. Part of it is infuriating. Let's say at the top that a lot of these young men, mostly young men, were allies of the United States. You have American soldiers saying these guys saved our lives in a lot of cases, and they can't get visas. What's behind the delay?
I mean, you know, after spending 8 or 9 months making this film, it's still a mystery. The system is so bad, it seems almost designed not to work. The best answer I've had is that each individual case falls onto someone's desk, and it's just easier for them to say no than it is to say yes. No one wants to be the person who lets that one guy in who might do something wrong in the U.S., despite the fact there's never been any evidence to suggest any of these guys have done anything wrong once they've got to the U.S., because they've already spent years fighting alongside U.S. troops in Afghanistan. You know, they've been vetted.
When you say do something wrong, you mean there's a fear among a bureaucrat that they're going to be responsible for an Afghan coming here and wind up being a terrorist?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean,
that's the fear.
That's the most logical explanation I've been given. Apart from that, there is no logical explanation. I mean, I met guys in Kabul who have had 40 letters from generals, you know, saying they saved lives. They saved 6, 7, 8 American lives. They've met all the conditions they need to meet, and yet they're still waiting 3, 4, sometimes 5 years to get their visa or just to get no decision at all.
Now, how many of these interpreters have succeeded in coming to the United States?
According to the State Department, it's roughly 3,000. It's probably gone up to closer to 4,000 in the last couple of months. They have sped the process up recently, but as we speak now, there are only a few hundred visas left and between 6,000 and 8,000 interpreters applying for visas. So the vast majority are going to go without unless things change radically very soon.
What is the nature of the threat? Somebody who lives... I have not been to Afghanistan. That's going to be apparent in the question. But somebody who lives in downtown Kabul might not have a lot of concern about Taliban retaliation. But what do many of these guys know about the nature of the threat that's facing them for helping the United States?
They're getting letters. They're getting phone calls. Many have been killed several a week, according to a UN report. So the threat is very real. Even the interpreters live in Kabul, which is considered to be relatively safe compared to the south and east of the country, they're in hiding. Everybody I interviewed is in hiding. And it's not just the Taliban. Their neighbors, sometimes the Afghan army and Afghan police are saying, you worked with the Americans, you're in trouble once they leave. Who's going to look after you then? You know, the guys we funded and trained are also threatening them.
Is there a better case, you know, for somebody who wants to emigrate to the United States than having, you mentioned it, you have shots of guys with 20 and 30 letters directly from a U.S. general or some respected U.S. official vouching for the person's loyalty and their service to the United States. At the same time, they have enemies at home who are threatening their lives. My cursory understanding of refugee law is that makes them a pretty good candidate.
Everyone in the film has met every condition necessary 10 times over. I mean, they need, you know, several letters. They've got 40 letters. It's a heartbreaking sight to see them carrying around these little files with these laminated letters that their lives literally depend on, and yet they're waiting months, years, just to get a decision, not necessarily a yes, but maybe a re-interview, or they'll be told their case has been denied. Some of the stories we heard, there was Srosh, who you heard at the beginning there. I mean, I was in Sangin with him for 5 weeks with the US Marines, and you literally had to watch every step you took because there were IEDs everywhere. Every day people were getting blown up and were losing legs or were getting killed. He took a month or so off for stress treatment. So on his record, it says that he left. Doesn't say why, no context whatsoever, but that's a black mark against his name, which usually means a failure. Now, there are some brilliant lawyers in New York called IRAP, the Iraq Refugee Assistance Program, who are trying to get that overturned, but just a tiny little black mark like that against your name, he left at one point for some reason, can mean you're denied a visa.
Now, you mentioned the Marine unit that Srosh was with and that you were with in your embed there. What do U.S. personnel, U.S. soldiers who fought in combat in Afghanistan say about these Terps that they worked with?
I haven't met a single one who hasn't got anything but the highest praise for these guys and considers them to be American veterans and part of their unit, and part of their unit which they're leaving behind. So, you know, I think most people now are aware of the massive PTSD issues, you know, amongst returning veterans. A huge contributing factor to that is they feel like they're leaving one of their best buddies behind and someone who helped them out so much, because, you know, the counterinsurgency policy in Afghanistan was about trying to win hearts and minds. It's impossible to even attempt that without the interpreters who are there side by side with them 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, no matter what.
Now, you mentioned that some 3,000 interpreters have managed to get visas, so there is some success in this program, surely. You also covered an American soldier, a captain, I believe, an officer, who's taken it upon himself to help as many of these guys as possible become success stories. What's the situation there?
His story is incredible. He was...
What's his name?
Matt Zeller. He features in the film, and his interpreter saved his life, literally killed two Taliban who were sneaking up to capture or kill him. The interpreter didn't want a visa. He didn't want to leave his country. He loved his country. 2 or 3 years later, another captain who had replaced Matt Zeller said, listen, your guy, Janice, his name is facing serious dangers. We need to get him out of here. Matt spoke to congressmen. He got a massive publicity campaign going. It still took him 3 years. And, you know, this guy literally saved several American lives and was getting regular death threats by the Taliban. You know, there couldn't be a more conclusive case of someone meeting the necessary conditions, and it still took 3 years.
You know, after Vietnam, Ben Anderson, we repatriated or allowed into this country thousands of Vietnamese refugees, many of whom helped the United States or were affiliated with the CIA because there was concern that they would face repercussions at home.
You know, I think America and you know, Britain, where I'm from as well, will find themselves in a foreign country again in the not too distant future, I'm sure, wanting the help of locals. The message from this is don't give them that help, because once they've finished, you know, using you, they'll abandon you.
There are thousands of translators and interpreters in Afghanistan who have helped United States forces and United States personnel in their efforts there over the last 10 to 12 years, and thousands of them cannot find a way into the United States under our current visa programs. Ben Anderson is senior producer and reporter with Vice. He's written an ebook about Afghan interpreters. You can download it at vicenews.com, and you can also go there to watch the documentary, The Interpreters. Thanks, Ben.
Thank you.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Geoffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at the New Yorker. So join us every week on the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.